Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Now to the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to the Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody. How are you? Paul, how's it going?
Good to see you, John. Weather's finally warming up. It was 37 degrees this morning as I got out there on my Nike Power Walk. Only did 2 miles because not all the sidewalks were cleaned. Some ice and some still nasty patches. So instead of doing my full five, I only got in 2. But it was great to be outside again.
You know, Paul, I just popped into my head, and I think it's a great one. You need to start monetizing your power walks. Maybe you could, like, strap some sort of plow device to you. So when you walk on the sidewalk, you can plow the snow to the side as you go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, you know the funny part? The police in town monitor people who don't do the sidewalks, and they do get a summons if they don't, you know, do their shoveling within like a day or two. They give them a little leeway.
So maybe you could work for the police.
That's what I was thinking, right?
Yeah, that's not bad.
I could maybe be like, what do they call it, the community police? Make citizens' arrests on people who haven't done their sidewalks?
I don't think you would be very well liked around town. Then again, you probably aren't already, so I'm not sure if it would hurt you much, but... Anyway, all right, we got a busy show today, folks. At 12:10, Dane Brugler, CBS Sports, will join us from Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. We'll kind of give us a little preview of that. We'll start slightly dipping into the draft talk. We know it's still a long way off. We got free agency first and all that, but the Senior Bowl is a big deal, so we will talk about that with Dane at 12:10. But the first few minutes, there is some, I guess you can call it breaking news. It depends how much you care about the Pro Bowl. But the Giants have 2 more guys going to the Pro Bowl, joining Odell Beckham Jr. and Eli Manning. Kicker Josh Brown, who really had a spotless season, spare that unfortunate missed field goal late against the Jets. And, of course, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who undoubtedly was the Giants' defensive MVP this year, basically in a year where nothing really went right on defense. So, 2 players from the New York Giants heading to Honolulu. You know those guys are pretty happy about it.
Yeah, excuse me. John, the numbers that that you want to keep in mind for Josh Brown, guy's been in the league 13 years. Had never been to a Pro Bowl before. And much like when the Giants had John Carney several years ago, who was on the tail end of his career and actually made the Pro Bowl and then wound up retiring, I think he might have had a cup of coffee. Maybe the Saints brought him back for a couple of kicks because they needed an emergency kicker. But here's Josh Brown, and hits 250 yarders this year. Hits 94% of his field goals, which set a Giants team record. Hits on 29 consecutive field goals, which set a Giants team record. Did a solid job on kickoffs, and I'm sure they're very, very happy that he was here. He signed a 1-year contract before last season to come back for a year after he was here the previous. I think he's a free agent right now, of course, being a 1-year deal. I would expect him to come back. He seems very happy here. And quite honestly, he's salary cap friendly. You know, he's not going to break the bank like a younger kicker would.
And then Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, one of the only returning starters on defense that's actually under contract. A lot of other guys are not under contract that the Giants might have back next year starting on the defense. And Paul, he had a couple really big interceptions early in the year. Remember that game against the Cowboys in the middle of the season, which the Giants won thanks to 2 Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie picks, one of which went for a touchdown. Dwayne Harris also had a kick return for a touchdown in that game, which is really the only way the Giants scored any points against the Cowboys. I think they won 24-17, if I recall. But he had a very good year, played well in coverage. You don't like him checking out of the game as much as he does from time to time. Sometimes isn't very anxious to get in there on a tackle, but excellent, excellent cover guy, and really just a guy you can put on the other team's best wide receiver and feel good about the job he'll do on him.
That is true. Much better durability-wise this year than the previous year.
Yes.
This year he only missed 1 game.
Correct.
Previous year he missed a handful. I only had him unofficially giving up 1 touchdown catch this season, and I think any NFL corner, if he completes his full season, and again, he only missed 1 game, and says, I only give up one touchdown pass all year, that's a good number.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take that from any cornerback in this league because it is such a pass-happy league. Now, the other thing about DRC, I think he gave up, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% completions, might have even been a little bit under, so that's a pretty good number as well. I also thought that he actually tackled better than I had seen him in previous years of his career.
Yeah, there were a couple of plays where he was isolated outside on a running back, and he did a good job of like taking out their legs. He did
absolutely,
that. Yes, absolutely.
You know, and so I thought he had a really good year. And there was one stretch there in the middle of the season, John, where he was involved in a turnover in four consecutive games.
Correct.
And that helped keep the Giants' hopes alive because, as you guys will remember, the Giants were near the top of the turnover ratio chart all season long. And, in fact, in the first half of the season, they were leading that chart.
Right.
He was a big reason for that. And so I thought he had a sensational season, and it's really nice to see him get a pat on the back because I know the Giants, they still have him under contract, as you mentioned, for a couple of more years at least. And so good for him. Second time he's made the Pro Bowl. He was also a Pro Bowler with the Cardinals some years ago. And I think for the Giants fan out there, it's pretty unique because, as I remember, Mark Haynes was the last Giants cornerback to make a Pro Bowl. That goes all the way back to 1984, which was the second year of my coverage with the team. So that really tells you how the position, while they've had some good guys, and I thought Mark Collins should have gone a couple of times, Perry Williams was a very, very good corner. Felipe Sparks was a very good corner. Those guys never made it.
No question about it. And obviously, a couple of disappointing plays late in the year by Dominique Roger-Cromartie. Dropped the interception against Washington, dropped the interception against Carolina, but again, he's a player that the Giants, you know, paid a lot of money to in free agency a couple years ago, and for the most part, it's worked out. He's been a guy that's come in here, he's done a very good job covering, and he's done pretty much everything he's been asked of. I'm trying to bring up the Pro Football Focus rankings on him, but I know coverage-wise, they were very, very strong this year in respect to his coverage ability, and if you take a look at the corners this year, he was a 15th best corner in the league, according to their grading system. So that's obviously very, very, very strong when you take a look at how he's done covering. Now, of course, the Pro Bowl format's a little bit changed now. So on Wednesday night, you'll have the two teams drafting their players. It's not AFC versus
right.
NFC, so you can have the two captains, the celebrity former player coaches. Each
I
have
liked
a couple
it the other
captains,
way, John.
And now you're going to pick the teams, but I know why you like to do it. This smells too much like fantasy football to you.
It does. I don't like that. And the other thing I don't like, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Beckham's going out to catch a pass. And if Dominic Rogers-Cromartie's on the other side, do you really want them fighting for that ball?
You're assuming anyone's going to fight for a ball in the Pro Bowl.
Odell has a lot of competitiveness in his blood. I think he will fight for every pass that's thrown his way. That's the way he is.
It's the Pro Bowl. Nobody gets
hurt. He's going to want to make every catch he can get his hands on.
I get that, but nobody gets hurt in the Pro Bowl because it's the Pro Bowl.
I'm not going to jinx anybody by saying nobody gets hurt. I will not do that, but I will say this. It has long been my opinion, since they established the new rules and got rid of the conference affiliations, that when you have teammates having to go up against teammates in the Pro Bowl, no matter how light the hitting may be, you're asking for trouble. I would not want to do it. I would be very, very leery about
Paul that. Paul Dottino's asking for less football. Is that what I'm hearing here?
No, what I want is conference affiliations to be put back in play, and I want the game to be a little bit more like it was in the 70s and 80s.
Maybe Odell Beckham Jr. will make sure that he gets Dominique Rogers-Cromartie on his team. Maybe he'll make sure that he gets Eli Manning on his team.
I think that's probably a wise decision.
Because you know Odell's going to want number 10 thrown on the football.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Absolutely.
There is no question about that.
All right. Let's go to our guest line and welcome in our good friend of the program, Dane Brugler. He covers the draft and college football for CBS. Does a great job analyzing it. Comes out with a great draft book every year, which I always get because I think it's just a great guide to everything going on with the draft process. I believe, Dane, you are out in Mobile, Alabama, correct?
I am. I'm driving through beautiful Mobile right now, hoping this rain holds off for practice later on.
All right, well, let's start with that first. You know, people look forward to the Senior Bowl game, but from what I understand, for someone that does what you do and what NFL scouts are trying to do, evaluate these guys, you get as much, if not more, out of practice than you do out of the game, right?
And that's what Senior Bowl week is all about, the practices. Most NFL personnel, coaches, scouts, they leave Thursday, Friday before the game even happens, because practice is where you learn about these players. You go through different drills at different positions, and then also the interview process. This morning we had the weigh-in. We got the official heights, weights, arm lengths, hand sizes, all that. So, you know, this is the Senior Bowl week. There's a lot to learn. It's really the first step in the job interview process for these seniors.
You know, one of the things that I'm always curious about is how much can a guy truly help himself or hurt himself, whether it be at the combine, and we all know how some folks get very, very into combine performances, and all of a sudden a player shoots far up the charts. In your estimation, how much can a guy help or hurt himself in an all-star week and game scenario?
It's really different, and it depends on the individual. Take Braxton Miller, for example, the Ohio State wide receiver, former quarterback, moved to wide receiver this past year. Had 26 catches. Ohio State used him. You could say they underutilized him. How will he do this week when he's running routes? We know he's a phenomenal athlete, weighed in this morning, 6'1 and a half, 204 pounds. But how will he do one-on-one matchups against FBS corners? The cream of the crop, guys that are, type of talent he's going to see at the next level. So I think it depends on the individual. Look at Carson Wentz, the North Dakota State quarterback, from FCS level. He might be the top senior quarterback drafted, possibly even in the top 10. And so this is a big week for him. How does he do with pro coaching? How does he do going up against FBS talent? So, it depends on the individual. A lot of these guys, they're just going to be checking boxes, making sure what they do this week matches up with the tape. But for some of these prospects, they can really help themselves this week.
And Dane, the one guy that jumps out to me is a couple years ago, Aaron Donald had a good season. His numbers are excellent. He got a tackles for loss, a lot of sacks, but he still, for whatever reason, wasn't considered a top prospect. And he shows up in Mobile, and he literally dominates every offensive lineman at the Senior Bowl. No one can block the guy, and he turns out to be a top 15 pick. Do you see the potential of somebody like that jumping off the page this year?
It's hard to see another Aaron Donald here, and you're absolutely right. Watching Aaron Donald go up against Zach Martin that year, that was just fun to watch. And this year, I think a guy that could really move up boards for a lot of teams and just people in general is Noah Spence, Eastern Kentucky, a player that five-star recruit, started his career at Ohio State, had some drug issues. The baggage is there, but so is the talent. He might be the most talented player down here in Mobile this week. And so if he can do the right things on the field and then also answer the questions off the field and carry himself the right way, I think Noah Spence is a name we'll start to hear more and more throughout the process.
I haven't checked. Is NFL Network televising any of these practice sessions? Sometimes they do that during these All-Star Game weeks.
ESPNU is going to be doing a lot of the practices live, and then NFL Network is doing a recap show afterwards. I talked with Phil Savage this morning about that, and he's thrilled about both networks, NFL Network.
Wow.
And ESPN both having a lot of coverage down here. So, you won't be able to miss the Senior Bowl coverage this week.
All right. Now, I have not seen the schedule. I must confess I'm a little bit behind on it. When will specifically, like the Giants would be looking for defensive end help, they would be looking for linebacker help, I would think. That's two of the positions of most interest. The Giants need defense. When would those guys be practicing? When would you be tuning in to maybe see what those guys are doing if you're Giants fans at home?
The way they do it is there's North team and the South team. And so there's North practice and South practice. Right now headed to the South practice, and that's when the Jaguars, they'll be coaching that team. We'll get a chance to look at those players and all the positions, practice at the same time. They'll do different position groups on the field, and then they'll do 7-on-7, go up against each other and do different drills depending on the coaches and what they want to do. The first practice today, usually a little lighter. Tomorrow, They'll put some pads on and start to get a little more physical, and then on Thursday as well. So it's really, you know, the field will be filled with these players going up against each other, doing different positional drills.
And I guess what I mean is, do you believe that it's a better defensive crop on one squad or the other, and is that the side of the ball that, again, Giants fans should be looking at?
Well, yeah, and I can make a case for both sides,
you
the
can.
North and the South. You look at the South roster, a guy like Reggie Ragland from Alabama, he just hits anything that moves, an explosive striker. We'll see how he does this week. And then also on the North team, the very strong defensive line, Austin Johnson from Penn State, Sheldon Rankins from Louisville, a couple terrific defensive tackles, Vernon Butler from Louisiana Tech, so on that North squad. So defensive line, I'm looking at the North squad. Linebackers look toward the South.
Cool.
All right, I only got one more specific Senior Bowl question for you, Dane, then I got a couple overall draft ones for you. You mentioned the Jaguars and the Cowboys are coaching these two teams. It seems to me that gives those teams a little bit of an advantage, seeing these players up close. How does that process work, determining what NFL teams get to come in and coach these players?
Yeah, there's no question about that, and especially you look at the Cowboys, they could be in the market for a quarterback. And the opportunity to look at Carson Wentz down here, no one will have a better idea of Carson Wentz than Jason Garrett and his staff after this week, you know, how he adapts to pro coaching and all that. And really just depends on you look at the draft order, and whoever's picking at the top of the draft, they get they're chosen as the coaches, and they have to have a full coaching staff. So teams like, you know, the Browns, the Titans, who had a little bit of a turnover at the coaching position, they were passed over, and that's how the Cowboys and Jaguars were picking fourth and fifth in the draft. They were selected to pick the coach for the Senior Bowl teams.
All right, now, as you were saying, a lot of the guys in the personnel departments maybe exit on Thursday after the practice sessions. So then how many scouts really do stay for the game itself? Is there much value in even watching the game if most of the guys have put – their best wares or efforts on tape during the practice week?
Yeah, and you know, the game matters, but not that much. And, you know, every team will have the tape of the game and they'll have a chance to watch it. But the game is so vanilla in terms of the base offenses, base defenses, no blitzing. You're not really going to get too creative with what's going on. But in terms of, you know, it's football. It's live action, so there's still value in it. But the real value is this week during the practices. And so it's great that a lot of these will be on TV for fans at home to see and follow along. But for the most part, you know, most everyone, the airport's full on Thursday and Friday with guys leaving town.
I have never had the privilege, as much as I'm a diehard NFL junkie and been doing this over 30 years, I've never had the privilege of covering the Combine. I've never had the privilege of going to the Senior Bowl and doing that either. So some of these questions may seem elementary, but I'm sure a lot of the fans don't know either. Do the guys get to talk, the scouts, the personnel people get to talk to any of these players during the week also? Not in a combine setting where they actually have official interviews, but do they get to get a feel for these players too, or are they only watching the practices?
Oh, no. Interview, definitely a big part of this this week. You know, yesterday I was at the hotel, and, you know, there's these athletes walking around, and teams are just, you know, pulling them aside and trying to get, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. So it's really informal. There are some more formal sessions later, but teams, whatever opportunity they have to talk to any of these players, they take full advantage. And these are seniors, so, you know, most of these teams and scouts have already chatted with these guys during the season. But for some of these players, this will be the first, you know, contact. And for a lot of these coaches, this is their first step in the evaluation process. The scouts, the GMs, you know, they've been focused on these seniors, these college players for months now. But you look at the coaches, you know, they just got done with the season. So this is their first exposure to these guys. So, you know, a good chance for these players to, you know, put their best foot forward.
All right, Dan, I got a few rapid-fire ones for you here on the draft class in general. You can answer these as quickly as you want. Is this going to be top half of the draft dominated by underclassmen this year? I know a record number of underclassmen have declared. Is this going to be dominated by, you know, third-year players?
And it definitely will be. I think we'll see a few seniors up there, maybe a Carson Wentz, maybe a DeForest Buckner. For the most part, just like every year, it'll be underclassmen heavy, probably 8 of the top 10, 9 of the top 10. will be juniors or redshirt sophomores.
Doesn't look like a lot of skill position guys in the top half. You've seen Ezekiel Elliott go around 10, the Treadwell kid being in the top 15. But otherwise, it looks like this is a pretty heavy up front and defense-heavy draft in the early parts of this draft, huh?
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. And, you know, you mentioned the two guys who have top 10 potential at the skill positions. And you look at the other receivers, Corey Coleman, you know, Mike Thomas, Josh Doctson. We might see another receiver in the back half of round one. But besides Laquon Treadwell, you know, it's going to be, you know, not many receivers taken early in the first. And then same thing with running back. Zeke Elliott, probably the only first-round running back this year. And, you know, it's really a wild card where he's going to end up. We saw Todd Gurley go 10th last year. Now, you know, Zeke's not on the same level, but he's still very talented, comes in and can help your team right away. So he'll probably still end up somewhere in the top half of round one.
You know, I got to ask you about Jalen Smith, the linebacker from Notre Dame. We saw him blow out his knee early in that bowl game about a month or so ago. And I think, you know, everybody's heart dropped when he had to, you know, get helped off the field because he was going to be a top five pick potentially. What do you know about where he's at right now? Has there been much talk about him, even amongst the folks who are at the Senior Bowl?
And, Dane, frankly, how much is he going to drop because of the injury?
Yeah.
Well, and it's something that really no one can say. It'll depend in March and April when teams get a chance to check in on his rehab. You know, when is he going to be able to play? And we'll have a better idea of that, you know, when the trainers and the staff have a chance to go in, look at the knee, see how the recovery is going, see what the rehab time looks like. And as long as everything's going well, I still think we see him in somewhere in the top 25. You know, it's a player that has a lot of potential. And even if he has to take a redshirt year as a rookie, you know, it's still a player that has first-round value. So we won't know for sure for another few months. But I still think we'll see Jalen Smith first round.
Miles Jack, Reggie Ragland, two of the linebackers that, you know, could go in the top half of the first round. How do you see those two guys projecting into a 4-3 defense in the NFL?
Well, I think both are scheme versatile. It's something that really appeals to NFL teams, both of them. And Miles Jack is just a special athlete. You just don't see many linebackers with his type of speed, the contact balance. I think he's best on the weak side in a 4-3, but he can play in the middle. He can play strong side. He can, you know, cover tight ends, running backs. And then Reggie Ragland, he's not as proven in coverage as you want. He's a player on third down. You see him, put his hand on the ground and rush at Alabama, but he's such a stout run defender. Like I said before, hits anything that moves, an explosive striker at contact. So, a lot to like with Reggie Ragland. A little different than Miles Jack. And Miles Jack, you know, has injury as well, but he's another player that just the ability is so great. He's going to end up somewhere in the top 10 picks.
Is Joey Bosa a pure pass rusher? Or is he the guy that's going to be able to play right end in the pros and beat left tackles one-on-one? Or is he a guy that's going to maybe be a left end on the pro level?
I think he can do both. He's probably a better left end for a team that, you know, looks at him, or, you know, a traditional 4-3 that, you know, does strong side, weak side, defensive end. But he's so well-rounded at a defensive end position. You know, he's so stout versus the run. He can rush the passer. Just doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. Now, I don't think he's going to be a double-digit pass rusher in the league. That's not his, his forte. It burst off the ball, beat tackles with pure speed. But at the same time, he's going to wear you down. He's the type of guy that offenses have to game plan for.
Final question, Jalen Ramsey, corner or safety?
He's a better safety, but he can play corner. You know, the versatility is one of the keys to him, his size, athletic profile. So much to love about Jalen Ramsey. That's why he's going to be somewhere in the top 10.
Hey, NFL teams love those safeties that can come down and play in the slot if you need it. Those guys do not grow on trees. Dane, we appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Have fun in Mobile, and we'll catch up with you later in the draft process. All right, my man?
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks, Dane. Have fun.
Enjoy.
And the practice. Appreciate the time given us. And there's a little preview of some of the guys you might hear about for the Giants at 10. Now, a lot of those guys, the Boses, the Ramseys, the Miles Jacks, I don't want to burst bubbles, but they very well could be off the board when the Giants pick at 10 based on what we're seeing now. Granted, again, it's January. A lot of things will change in the next 3 months.
Well, and then there's the other potential of always trying to move up.
Sorry.
Because if you are at 10, that pick is pretty valuable. And if you need to move up three or four spots because there's a guy that you absolutely are dying to get your hands on, You know, you could make some maneuvers with that 10th overall pick.
Now, we saw the Giants move the draft Landon Collins in round 2 last year.
They did.
But the price to move up even in that top 10 could sometimes be very, very steep depending on what players are there and where the other teams in that trading scenario are in terms of their rebuild, what players they're looking for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, quite frankly, John, and I hate to flip-flop with you, but it could go the other way too. I mean, if there is somebody itching to move up to the 10th spot because they think there's an absolute bona fide blue chip, or maybe somebody's saying, I got to get one of those receivers.
Or
I got to get the quarterback.
Maybe I got to get the quarterback. I think that's
okay.
What you're looking at. Absolutely.
Oh, guess what? Really? You want the 10th overall for the quarterback? Let's see. I think that's going to cost you a 2. It's going to cost you a 3. And maybe we will slide down 10 spots. And you know what? Maybe that 2 and 3 helps you get some more defensive guys.
201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's go to the phones. And I want to talk a little bit about the championship games, too, from Sunday, but we'll get to that as we go along in the show. Vic in Florida will lead us off. I haven't heard from Vic in a while. What's going on, pal?
I haven't talked to you guys in such a long time. I am so disgusted about the whole Giants situation that it's not funny. Now, if you can give me the opportunity to read you a little something, it's going to be short and quick, and then you give me your thoughts on it, okay?
Go right ahead, Vic. You have the floor, my friend.
All right. This is what an analyst on NFL.com thinks of the coaching move made by the Giants. I like Ben McAdoo, but I loathe the Giants' process. So let me get this straight. Talent poor, missed the playoffs for the fourth straight year, and made the Hall of Fame coach, Tom Coughlin, the scapegoat. McAdoo, the play caller who at some questionable moment, see Cowboys, loss in parentheses, got promoted. The Giants apparently are keeping the defensive coordinator of a unit that ranks dead last, and most shockingly, New York has retained general manager Jerry Reese, despite a paper-thin roster filled with bad draft picks and free agency moves. Reese is the real issue with the Giants.
Who wrote that, Vic?
Remember when Big Blue acted like an elite organization? These off-season dealings are unfair to Coughlin and the great Giant fans.
Who wrote that, Vic?
That's my belief. I agree with this guy that said that.
Who wrote that, Vic?
And if you want to cut me off, fine.
No,
but
I'm not.
as long as Reese runs that club, we're never going to go anywhere, Paul or John. I'm sorry to say this, but I am too disgusted. Okay,
Vic, I'm not cutting you off. I'm just curious who wrote that article, just so I know who it came from.
I don't know. Somebody sent it to me, and I figure I'll save it for you guys.
Got it. All right, Vic. I think here's what we'll say to that. I don't think, and John Mara basically said that in his press conferences, believe that the Giants are going to solve all their problems by replacing Ben McAdoo. That's not the goal here. They believe that Ben McAdoo is a guy that can be the head coach here for the future for a very long time. They think he's going to be a very good coach. So that's why they decided to give him the job. As for why they decided to let Tom go, it's 4 straight years of making the playoffs. Sometimes you need to have some level of change. John Mara went out of his way to say this is not Tom Coughlin's fault. This was an organizational failure when you look at this in a whole. And they made the point that there are, and this is a quote from John Mara, there are not enough championship caliber players on the defensive side of the ball, and if this team's going to improve, the players have to get better, and you have to get better players on the roster. Jerry Reese said exactly the same thing.
Yes, John, but who does that? That's the general manager that has to provide all these good players.
No, and look, Vic, you're absolutely right. And now, as John Mara said when they hired Ben McAdoo, or I believe he actually said this when Tom Coughlin resigned, Jerry Reese knows this is on him. And moving forward, that's the deal. It's going to be his responsibility to bring the right players here, to bring the Giants back to prominence.
Vic? I certainly hope so, John. Because let me tell you, I've been really feeling it, and I'm a big Giants fan. And then the last quote here that says, on the same article, that says, if the G-men felt the need to make changes, well, then they should have executed a cleansing from the top to bottom. Instead, they put lipstick on a pig.
All right.
That's it.
Vic, honestly, I'm sure we both very much appreciate your phone call. You're a great fan. We'd like to hear from you again sometime very soon. But here's what I'm going to tell you. It is now the end of January 2016. I'm not trying to be funny. You have to look forward. What has happened has happened. The record is in black and white. It's on the paper. You can't change it. You can feel miserable about it. You can keep wringing your hands about it all you like. It's not going to change. The Giants did not make the playoffs this year, and they've got to try to build for the 2016 season. The more time that you waste and stress yourself out over what's happened in the past is the less time you're going to have about trying to enjoy the future and trying to see if this team can get itself back on track. I'm just being pragmatic and logical here. This has nothing to do with whether or not you agree or disagree with the decision. It has to do with where do you want to focus your energies. And if you want to wallow in the misery of a non-playoff season, you're welcome to do that. Vic, I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at the All-Star games. I'm looking at the talent pool. I'm looking at the ever-changing free agent pool. And I'm saying to myself, okay, if I were the Giants, what do I need to do with all these guys in front of me to make the right selections that are going to help my team over the course of the next several months? That's where my energy is. It's not on, oh, we didn't make the playoffs again this year, and what do we do right and what do we do wrong? That's not where I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's time to move forward and get better. That's the bottom line.
You know, Paul locked himself in his office a few days after the season for 3 days. That's what he did then, and he got it all out of his system. He ran into the wall a few times, cried himself to bed, but that's out of his system. It's all good.
You remember what the players say, John? 24-hour rule?
Yes.
Right? Win or lose, 24 hours to celebrate, cry, do whatever you got to do, then move on to the next opponent that's coming up on Sunday. I'm asking you to do that, Vic, with the season.
Yeah, I'm not sure you need 24 hours for a season's tough, but
no,
a week. That's
and
fair.
It's more than a week since the season's over.
And it's also been more than a week since they've decided on the new head coach and all that stuff, too.
So how about this? How about we call it the 24-day rule? I'll even give you 3 weeks. But you know what? The season's already 3 weeks old since it ended, right?
Just barely. January 4th was the last game. So you're
the
right.
Third.
You're right on the cusp.
The third.
Was it the third?
It was the third.
You made it.
So the 3 week rule, the 24-day rule. Well, 24 days plus, that would be 27, wouldn't it? 4 plus 24 is 27. Vic, you can cry for one more day. But after tomorrow, I don't want to hear about last season.
David's in North Carolina. David, how are you, buddy?
Hey, doing good, guys.
Hi.
Taking the call.
No problem, David. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, appreciate the, you know, that's all we got to look forward to is the draft stuff. I appreciate you having guys like that on and look forward to, you know, hearing from it, whatever you can guys can provide in the future. I'm just, man, I'm ready for a linebacker, man. I'm telling you what, you know, the Miles Jack, man, he gets me excited. I think if Shaq Lawson falls to number 10, I think you got to take the D lineman. I'm kind of like Ernie, of course, you can't have enough pass rushers, and God knows we don't have any right now. Especially with Ayers and JPP's, you know, future with the team up in the air. But if we don't take Miles, if we can't get Jack, you know, and we take a defensive lineman in round one, the two guys I really like are Miles Jack and Antonio Morrison out of Florida. You know, maybe in the second round if we take a defensive end in the first. And my, you know, my argument for both guys is it doesn't have they don't have to play the middle. I mean, Paul, you can attest to this. Jesse Armstead was a leader, and he was a weak side guy, man.
That's right.
I want a playmaker linebacker. I mean, when you see some of the stuff that Miles Jack does on film, and I know his size is an issue, but I thought you made a good point, John, the other day. You know, I think it's time to start transitioning and realizing what the NFL is going to, and it's going to be okay to take some of these smaller guys because, you know, it's a passing league now. I mean, they don't have to be 245, 250, and he doesn't have to play the middle. He can play the middle on third down and still be the leader of our defense as a weak side guy. I mean, there's some linebackers there to be had, and, you know, I know it's not December, but if I had to make a Christmas list out, man, I want a playmaking linebacker. I mean, Antonio Pierce, Chase Blackburn, those guys did some good things for us, but those guys played the game mentally.
Pierce was a Pro Bowl player now. Don't shortchange him. He was a Pro Bowl player.
Yeah, but he wasn't a freak athlete. That's why he didn't get drafted.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, listen, I love Antonio Pierce. If I could take him right now, you know, reincarnated, I would. But, I mean, we haven't had a playmaking physical tool linebacker since Mike Barrow and Jesse Armstead, and it's pathetic. I mean, let's get a playmaking linebacker that can there's no reason we can't have somebody cover Jason Witten, man.
Well, I like what you're saying about, you know, you're not married to has to be a guy in the middle because you mentioned Jesse Armstead from the outside. Carl Banks was an outside guy. Brad Van Pelt was an outside guy. And how many plays did he make when he went to five straight Pro Bowls? So you're right.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a guy in the middle. But my take on this has been with that 10th pick overall, it's got to be an impact guy in the front seven. And I'm not even going to cry about what position he is because if the guy is an impact guy in the front seven, he makes this team a lot better just by being on the field.
Yeah, David, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And with that, I want to bring us back to the championship games this weekend. And what did you see from, you know, all four of those teams? Excellent front sevens. Whether you're talking about the Broncos with Miller and Ware, and then you have the big Jackson kid in the middle, mm-hmm. linebackers that can run mm-hmm. in Marshall and Trevathan. You go to the Cardinals even, who obviously did not play well. You have Calais Campbell up there. Other guys that can move and play. The Panthers, obviously, with all those draft picks. Lotulelei, Kawan Short, Coney Ealy, Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, Shaq Thompson. I mean, look at all those guys that can make plays. And then you go to the Patriots. They drafted Chandler Jones. They got a bunch of other guys that can rush the passer up there. Jabal Sheard, the guy they got over from the Browns, is a good situational pass rusher. I mean, those front sevens, Jamie Collins, the big-time linebacker, I mean, they have all guys that can play all along those front sevens.
Ultimately, what you saw in both of these playoff games, John, is that the winning teams dominated the trenches.
They went up front.
And both of the losing teams had offensive lines that played poorly. In the Patriots' case, it was suspect for quite a while because they were shuffling guys in
the whole
season.
They had so many injuries. What could you
do? So they were hurting going in. But there's no doubt that the two winning teams that are going to the Super Bowl totally controlled the line of scrimmage. And to be honest, primarily with the front fours, they didn't need a lot of help from the linebackers or the sevens.
Broncos lost three and got there.
But, your point's well taken. Because ultimately, it is about that front seven because those backers still do work in unison. Even when the Giants had the great front four in Super Bowl 42 against the Patriots. Again, look what they got that particular game out of Antonio Pierce. Look what they got out of former Falcons backer.
Michael Boley.
Michael Boley. Who, you know, they got stuff out of those guys. Boley was 2011. But it's like Kavika Mitchell was 2007. Kavika Mitchell was 2007.
Oh, I thought you were including both.
Yeah, Boley was in 2011.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, you got something out of those backers, but it does start with the front four. But I agree with you. That's why I keep saying impact in the front seven is good enough for me.
It's also so important now, Paul, to have these linebackers know how to cover. I mean, the importance of these underneath zones that these line. I mean, look what Luke Kuechly does. He's like a safety playing in there. He's so good. It changes the whole dynamic of how you play. I mean, the Broncos are able to put a linebacker out there on James White, and he didn't do anything. They threw at him like 18 times. He didn't do anything because the Broncos linebackers cover him one-on-one outside.
We have seen another trend with the tight ends going to more of these receiving tight ends.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they've gotten away. The Howard Crosses of the world, who used to block like a Dickens but not catch a whole lot of passes, those guys are kind of like dinosaurs right now. And so everybody wants the pass-catching tight end. Look, let me tell you something. Greg Olsen's from Wayne, okay? He's a local Jersey guy. I'm supposed to like him. Greg Olsen is not a complete tight end.
No, he's not a blocker.
Okay? He is a terrific pass-receiving tight end. But you know what? He's half a player. He's not much of a blocker at all.
But with the way the NFL works now, you can play a guy like that and you're going to be okay as long as he's really dynamic. Now, you can't have an average receiving tight end that doesn't block a lick.
Right.
That ain't going to work. But
right.
If you have a great receiving tight end and get away with it, you can do that.
And you know what? I'm coining a new phrase for these guys. Video game tight ends.
Why do you always got to
video that? Game tight ends. There you go, Greg Olsen. You're an outstanding Pro Bowl video game tight end. And that's great because, again, in today's NFL, those are the guys who have the success. I get all of that. But now, what does that mean? You're right. Your linebackers have to be able to be video game linebackers.
It's a video game life, and Paul Dottino's just living in it.
Move on.
Nugs in Minnesota. What's going on, Nugs?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
How are you, Nugs?
I'm pretty good, man. You know, I was just, just getting over the sadness. My coach getting fired. I agree with the first caller that Tom Coughlin pretty much took the rap for a lot of other guys, but I also agree with Paul that, you know, it's time to move on. You know, I ride with the organization more than any one player or coach. So
absolutely. Hey, look at Nugs. Everyone out there knows how much Paul and I love Tom Coughlin. We're not going to sit here and throw the season on his shoulders or blame
him.
Huge
Tom Coughlin fans.
Tom Coughlin can coach my team any day of the week.
Yeah, mine too. What I wanted to chime in today and is how I feel that we should approach the offseason. And I'm going to let you guys know, I don't know as much about football as y'all do. I'm just a fan, but I'm putting on my fan GM hat.
That's right. Go ahead, man. That's
why
we're here. We are giving you the hat.
What do you got?
Okay, this is what I would do. I'm hoping that Victor Cruz comes back healthy and can play for us next year. I'm not banking on it. I know he's still under a contract, so I would not even tamper with his contract. I would just put him on a play-improve basis. But I would go out in free agency and try to get one big-time wide receiver. There's a couple of them that are coming free. I know Megatron's coming free. I know Alshon's coming free. I know they both might be kind of expensive. And like I said, I don't know the numbers, but if I could make one free agent signing, that would be it. To get Eli, we
oh
already
boy.
Know with McAdoo.
And Nugs,
offense is
Nugs, here's the thing. I love Alshon Jeffrey. I think he'd be a great fit. I think Eli Manning would love throwing him the football. I think him and Odell Beckham would easily be the best wide receiver tandem in football. The Giants would be a top three offense, and they'd be virtually unstoppable. So in that respect, I like it. Here's the one problem with
it. Okay.
Here's the one problem with
it. He's going to cost money.
Well, that's the thing. It's not even just that. You have limited resources to try to fix a defense that was historically bad this year. You only have two or three returning starters under contract. You have to figure out seven or eight guys to fit into that defensive starting lineup and to use, even if it's 20 to 25% of your cap space, for example, and a guy like Jeffrey, in the end, you're probably going to end up shortchanging the defense.
Nugs, what did we just talk about before you called?
I agree with you.
All right, right? We just told you about the front seven and the trenches are the primary reasons why these two teams are in the Super Bowl. And you're going
to
tell me your number one priority is wide receiver.
I'm getting to the draft now.
All right, go ahead.
You see what I'm saying? I only want to make that one move in free agency. Then let's spend all of the money, the rest of the money, doing exactly what you guys said. You know, we draft linebackers, we draft front seven, we draft, and then whatever we have left to spend as far as free agency, we spend it on defense.
Chances are, Nugs, and honestly, I don't want to be argumentative with you, but chances are, if you're going to go for one big ticket wide receiver, that's really going to impede whatever it is you want to do to that defense. Because wide receivers, especially the best guys, are going to be exorbitantly expensive.
Yeah, Nugs, I would rather spend money on two big-time defensive players than get one big-time receiver and one big-time defensive player. You know what I mean? I don't think you're going to be able to fit three stars.
You're going
to overpay. As much money as you have, you know, you have to fill out a whole roster. There's 53 guys that suit up every week. You got to pay everybody, and I don't think you can afford three top tier guys.
That's why I'm a fan.
No, well, you just said you want to get that big ticket receiver out of the way. Then you want to put the rest of it to defense. What I'm telling you is that big ticket receiver is going to be so overpaid. It's going to hurt what you have left.
I mean, Alshon Jeffrey could be a $100 million player.
This is what I don't want to see. I don't want to see a situation like last year where Eli only has one reliable option on offense. I mean, our offense did so good, and it was just him and Odell Beckham. It's just a matter of time before Odell Beckham gets worn down like Victor Cruz got worn down, and he's the only option. We have to get somebody else on the other side of him. It doesn't.
Nugs, I'm with you. Trust me.
It doesn't have to be you know, a big ticket guy, but you know.
Okay, so you'd like to see them add a receiver, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with adding a receiver, but it can't be, at least to my way of thinking, the top priority. In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to say something. I promised myself I wouldn't even talk about the draft really very much right now at this point, but I'm going to tell you right now, I wouldn't mind if the Giants went defense with their first three picks in the draft. That's how much I believe they've got to go defense. And if they can spend money on a big-ticket defensive player, I want a pass rusher. And if it needs, if they can't do that, I'll take a veteran safety. But I'm not – the receiver is such an afterthought for me, Nugs. I think they got to get one, but that's kind of like
–
Go ahead.
Finish up,
Nugs. If I was the man – I wouldn't draft an offensive player in the draft.
Okay, all right, so we're good.
Draft on defense.
We're good. I'm good with that. Thank you, Nugs.
And then if we have some money left over, you know, let's see what we can do.
All right, Nugs.
Cool.
Appreciate the call, dude. And I'm trying to bring up a wide receiver free agent list here to maybe figure out a cheaper alternative to the type of guy that, you know, Nugs is talking about.
There. Let me say this, Steve.
My computer is very slow today.
No, mine was too before. Here's the thing, okay? I think it's fair to say, based on the Giants roster, at least at the moment, they need help at all three levels of the defense. Would you agree with me? Line, linebacker, and secondary.
Yes.
All three levels.
Absolutely.
Okay. On offense, we know that they could use some more help on the offensive line, and we know that they certainly could use a little more depth at receiver and at tight end. But, if you were to rank the order of needs, and you have to do that because there is a draft and you only have so many picks and there is so much money under the salary cap, you have to prioritize the needs because somehow, some way, you're going to try to fill as many as you possibly can and you probably aren't going to be able to fill all of them. So, you have to look at this and say, how do we fill out the most pressing needs first, and then the needs that are a little bit less, maybe we settle in one or two of those positions for somebody who just might be an upgrade, but may not be as great as some of the other positions.
Like, you know who I think would be a good wide receiver to
go
target?
Ahead.
Because I don't know how much money he's going to make.
Go ahead.
Marvin Jones, who's been the second wide receiver to A.J. Green in Cincinnati.
Okay. There's a level down guy. I don't know what kind of money he's going to ask for, but that's be the guy you want to explore.
Yeah, I think that's a veteran that's been in the league a while, has made it happen. He can make plays down the field. He's a deep ball guy. That's somebody you could talk about. Rishard Matthews from the Dolphins kind of had a breakout year this year, if you want to talk about him. I don't know how much money Jermaine Kearse from the Seahawks, he's young, is going to want. But, you know, Nate Washington, he's a veteran that's done it for a while. He's a decent wide receiver. I don't know how much of an upgrade he is. But honestly, the wide receiver free agent list this year, Paul, is not that deep.
No, I mean,
it's not that deep of a list.
And you know what? You'd like to believe, you know, you don't know, but you'd like to believe that Victor Cruz is going to come back
right.
and give you something.
But you want at least, you know.
Again, the position needs to be fortified.
Right.
But before you start throwing big money at the position, you have other spots that need to be addressed, and you also want to see how much Victor Cruz can give you.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Marvin's in Delaware. Marvin, what's going on?
How you doing, John and Paul?
Hi, Marvin.
Hello.
How you doing? I'm calling. I've been a Giant fan since 75, since they ended up in New Jersey. That's the first time I realized about the Giants. They were the New Jersey Giants to me, but I still love them. I lived up in Boston for 27 years.
And oh, boy.
Down in Delaware because I work in law enforcement, so they transferred me here.
Okay. Thank you.
Why I'm calling, I coached out in Boston, and I listen to a lot of fans. I watch your show every day.
Thank you for that.
I work for the government, and I get a chance to hear you guys on the radio every day.
Appreciate
that. And I listen to the fans, and a lot of people saying, I want, I need, we got to do this, I think I do this. And I don't think people realize how difficult it is to develop a team. It's not easy to puzzle a championship team together. And I don't think how people realize how tough that is. And it takes the whole organization to do that.
Yeah.
I love Tom Coughlin. He was one I rooted for to get the job when Fossil was there.
So
did
I. I
liked Fossil, but I thought the team needed discipline of Coughlin, and they did hire him. And I was happy about that. I'm not a big fan of McAdoo. I love what he does on the offense, but he's a young guy, 2 years. A lot of two-year wonders don't make it in the NFL, but I'm a fan, so I have to support them and sit and just watch and see what happens. I'm not going to get upset over something I can't control, but that's just my opinion. But my main thinking on it is when people talk about Jerry Reese, and I have an issue with that, and because him and Coughlin, they all have to work together. And the problem I think the Giants have had with their draft picks, it's not so much all the picks, because every team has issues with their pick. Even the great New England Patriots. If you notice, they can't recruit, draft, or bring in a free agent wide receiver. If you look at their roster for years, I don't think the only one they had was Randy Moss. The rest of those guys, they probably never got 50 catches a year. And they complain about that.
Yeah.
So
I feel so sorry for the Patriots. Don't you? I feel real bad for them.
Excuse me?
I said, I feel so sorry for the Patriots. They just don't have enough receivers for Tom Brady. Excuse me while I weep for a half hour.
Right. But that's the difference between them and most people, most teams. And this is where the Giants have their issue. And the issue is the development of those players. They had a great draft pick in 2007. And if you remember, every one of those draft picks contributed to that Super Bowl. Every one of them.
Absolutely. You know what hurts? You know, you just want to just target a position. You just want to talk about wide receivers. Imagine where the Giants wide receiver core would be right now if Akeem Nicks had stayed healthy, Victor Cruz had stayed healthy, and, you know, of course, they probably wouldn't have taken Beckham where they did. But could you imagine a receiving core with those three guys all on the field at the same time? Again, I understand that. They wouldn't have taken Beckham as high as they did if they had both Cruz and Nicks kicking butt. But, you know, the point of, hey, guys have to be able to be developed is very valid, because no matter what the raw player is when he's taken, he's got to mature. He's got to develop his own skills. The coaches have to help him develop his own skills. And then he's got to stay healthy.
All big aspects of it.
And all of those things, what's the sum total? The sum total is what you said at the beginning of your phone call. It takes an awful lot to build a winning football team.
And Marvin, just to build on your point real quickly, here are some Patriot wide receiver draft picks over the years. 2013, Aaron Dobson, second round. Josh Boyce, fourth round. 2011, check that, they didn't draft one there. 2010, Taylor Price in the third round. 2009, Brandon Tate, third round. So You're right. Not every team is perfect. Every team has draft
you
picks.
You could fill
misses.
An Arena League roster with those
you
guys.
You absolutely can. And but, Marvin, you're right.
John,
it is
John,
hard.
You didn't even look at their free agent roster.
No, I did not. You're right.
The only one you can put in there is Randy Moss. And after that, they're nobodies. They all fell off the side of the earth. What I'm saying is everybody said, give me a linebacker. It's not that easy. Where they're picking, they're trying to pick the best player. And maybe a linebacker is not there at the time they're picking. And they say, pick a linebacker. And look at the college game today. A lot of them are not playing 4-3s. You
I
can't
know.
Find middle linebackers in college anymore.
Very difficult.
You can't find the guys you're looking for anymore. That defensive end you want, he's now a hybrid defensive end these days.
Well, you
but
know
you
why, though?
Under every rock to find somebody.
And that's why a lot of people are crying for a developmental league of some point, of some capacity, because you have these big-time college programs.
And thanks for the call, Marvin. We appreciate it. Great points, great stuff, and thank you so much for watching and listening. All right, pal?
Thank you.
Thank you. Good stuff. And I want to build off of that because you have the big-time college programs, John. They want to win now. They want to go to the bowl games.
Of course.
They want to cash. They want to win. They want to make their alums happy.
They're
not looking at themselves as minor leagues.
They're not a minor leagues. You know how much money they make in college
exactly.
football?
Exactly. But when you're looking at it from a professional angle,
right.
you're looking at it as that's the crop. That's the minor league system. That's going to feed us. Well, what's happening is the priorities of the big-time college programs, and again, I get it. That's what they're supposed to do. They're not matching right now.
Generally,
it's not.
Alabama does.
Sometimes. But right now, there is a chasm, more so than any of the years that I've been covering football, between what the pro guys need and want and what the college guys are trying to do.
I vaguely remember a period, and I was kind of young, so maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, when the option and the triple option got really big. In like the late 80s and early 90s,
sure.
Nebraska was running it. You had Tommy Frazier and all that stuff.
All over the place.
That was a similar situation where the college maybe didn't deliver some, especially at the quarterback position, the type of players you want in the pros because they had that system.
Very
hard. And I think you're seeing a very similar situation now with the read option, the spread, you know, where a guy like Tim Tebow can be perhaps the greatest college football quarterback in history and not be able to sniff an NFL roster playing that position.
The first time this came to my eyes in terms of the difference between the priorities and how there started to be a chasm was back in the late 80s to early 90s, and then it really took force in the mid-90s, where the tight ends in college, what was happening was I had professional scouts and pro personnel guys say to me, we can't find tight ends anymore. They're just not there. Because all the guys who were supposed to be tight ends were going to play basketball. They wanted to be power forwards, okay? Because they figured they could make more money. They could have less injuries to their bodies.
I don't blame them. I'd go play basketball, too.
There you go.
Right.
And so the actual position of tight end started to just become barren in the high college ranks. Because you just couldn't find them because the college players weren't being developed and the pro guys were saying, where are we going to get tight ends?
Well, fullbacks don't exist anymore at all.
Great. There you go. And that's the next generation of
right.
this chasm. Fullbacks are now like a dinosaur. The prototype tight end became a dinosaur years ago. Now the fullback is. Now you got to wonder. Well,
defensive ends in the 4-3. All those things are starting to change. Everybody's shrinking.
Yep.
Everybody's shrinking.
Your 4-3 defensive end is another
one. That's why this
whole
thing, old players today, everybody's bigger, faster, stronger. They might be faster. They might, by body mass, be stronger. They're not bigger. I mean, you go back to the early 90s, you had 255, 260-pound linebackers running around. They're not bigger.
Some of them are, some of them aren't. But
generally speaking, I mean, back, Paul, 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, Telvin Smith out of Florida State gets drafted. He was 228 pounds at the combine.
Ridiculous.
He's a linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah, ridiculous.
228 pounds.
So, you know, in terms of the way that the game has changed, you got the pro game that's morphed in its
own
way.
I got two calls I got to get.
Oh, okay. But the pro game is morphed in its own way. The college game is morphed. And in a lot of ways, there's been a separation. And that's what makes it really, really hard.
And it makes it hard to scout these guys.
It does.
Out who's going to be able to
no
make that
question.
Transition. Let's go to line one first, Brian. Let's go to Ralph in New York. Ralph, what's up, pal?
Hey, you doing, gentlemen?
Doing well,
hi.
Ralph.
Hope you're having a good afternoon.
You too.
Hey, when Victor Cruz hurt his knee, is that also the same leg that he hurt his calf? That's one of my
questions. No, it is not.
No, it's the other leg, which is why it's so confusing.
Okay.
And good news, by the way, I updated folks yesterday on the show. If you didn't watch it, Victor Cruz did have his procedure, and I understand his rehab is on schedule. They're very pleased with his progress to this point.
Paul has been personally stretching out that calf muscle. Don't worry. Everything's under control.
That sounds good. Also, when Beckham had his debacle on the field and all his nonsense,
yeah,
one of my friends said he heard that he had also had some problems with the coaches afterwards or whatever, and that they're trying to get rid of him. I said, no way. I didn't hear anything like that.
That is something I've never heard before.
No, okay. Never heard that.
And that's exactly what I told him. And what, back to Cruz, what is actually his physical status now? He's like right on target to make training camp.
I'm not sure what the timetable is. I would expect he'll be part of the off-season conditioning program. How much he'll do with his legs, who knows? But he'll obviously do upper body lifting and stuff like that. Let me put it this way. I imagine, Ralph, that they're going to be quite cautious with Victor Cruz based on what happened last year. So it would not, again, this is me guessing. I have no idea what his rehab schedule is. No idea.
Nor do I.
But even if physically the doctors say he'll be ready to go for minicamp in June, the team might just say, to hell with it. We're waiting another month and a half to make sure you're okay. We'll see you in training camp at the end of July.
I do know this, that whatever schedule they have laid out for him, and I don't know what that schedule is, I do know that they believe he's on it. He's not behind. They're not disappointed in any way. So just take that for what it's worth as a positive sign.
Thank you, Ralph. We got to run, pal. Jeff in Rhode Island, wrap us up today, bud. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well.
Very good. Johnny, your premonition was right on there, buddy. You were spot on with that. That was
which one?
Job by you, I got to say.
Which one?
The one about, how Denver was going to win the game with their defense, et cetera, et cetera.
I did predict. I said the Broncos would win the turnover battle. Manning wouldn't make any mistakes, make a couple plays downfield, and they come out with the win.
I had the Broncos and the Cardinals, so I was only one for two.
I also had the Cardinals, so I was one for two as well. I admitted it last week. I picked the Broncos with my heart a lot more than I did with my head.
Okay.
Being a diehard Giants fan, it was very pleasing to me to see Brady get knocked around the way he got knocked around in that game. Made me think back to Super Bowl 42 when Paulie Hiss went for you. It made me think back to the 12 times the Giants sacked Randall Cunningham back in the early 80s. Made me remember that, too. I mean, their defensive game plan was awesome.
You know, when you see a quarterback running for his life like that, it real puts a smile on your face, doesn't it?
especially when it's Brady. It was a beautiful thing, man. I was
except
loving
if it's Eli Manning.
Well, there you go.
But I watched the Shrine game the other day. The kid from Stony Brook, he looks like he might have a little talent, a defensive lineman there, and I don't know what that means, but we'll see. And I'll be watching the Senior Bowl and do my yearly scouting on that and see.
Watch the practices. You heard our guest before
the
practices
are
on ESPN.
Network,
get a look at that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Have a good day.
Take it easy. And honestly, before we say goodbye, I feel terrible for Carson Palmer. He's got to live off all offseason with that. Oh, boy. And he, that's a funny, it's like he put the Oakland Raider uniform back on from 2012.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. It was a Jekyll and Hyde situation. In fact,
he was so good all year.
The week before, he wasn't very good
in
the playoff game either.
He was not good against Green Bay.
He had two stinkers at the end of the season. Bad timing. Ooh, really bad timing. Although, again,
it looked like he was just at the end. He was just closing his eyes and chucking the ball.
Let's also go back to the defensive front of Carolina.
Absolutely.
Totally owned the line of scrimmage.
Absolutely. So. And David Johnson couldn't really do a whole lot. By the way, I think he's going to be a good running back.
Yeah,
I like that kid.
I like him, too.
He's a good all-around player. All right, folks, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live was brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Brian, you pay attention to that. Are they doing a Pro Bowl contest this week? They are? Boy. Good luck figuring out who's going to play well in the Pro Bowl, folks. good luck and Godspeed. For Paul DiTino, I'm John Schnell.
See ya.
We'll see you next time. Next 2 days, it's Meadow and Marks, the M&M people. I can't say boys because that's not true. So the M&M folks coming up the next couple of days, Meadow and Marks, and then I'm back with Feagles on Friday. Everybody, have a great day.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.